Welcome to the Roundtable Podcast, a ministry of Westside Church that seeks to help those who have questions of Jesus, His church, and the call to follow Him.
Well, I am excited to be with you. Yeah. I want to welcome everybody who's listening. This is another edition of our Roundtable Podcast. Really excited to have Randy Friesen with us. He's executive director, or what?
Chief servant, servant of all.
Okay, he's with MB Missions.
Yeah.
I've known you, or of you, way back in the day when I was at Willing, and you came in maybe late '90s.
Yeah.
And taught there, and I mean this with all my heart. Very impressed. You actually came down and did a youth thing.
Yeah.
Back in the day, but I've grown to know you. We serve on a board now, the C2C National Board.
Yeah.
And I mean this with all my heart, Randy, and I'm not saying this for this. I admire you. I am invigorated by you, challenged by you. And we were talking last night leading to this, because this is sort of a last minute, but such a, I think, a what will be a beneficial discussion about what's going on in the world. Where is the gospel making inroads? Mm-hmm. Some of the hot topic stuff that's going on in our world where, man, the Christians just don't know how to react, especially North American Christians.
Yeah.
Those types of things. So I thank you for your time. It's good to see you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
appreciate the invite.
Just so people who are listening, Randy is, like I said, directs MB Missions. Can you give us kind of a snapshot of MB Missions?
Yeah. We work in like 40 countries around the world. We send out church planting teams, but increasingly those teams, they are coming underneath apostolic national leaders, guys who are planting churches. We're equipping, resourcing, supporting, and we work in mostly least reached areas, so places where the gospel is not well known and that are strategic in terms of the advance of the church. And we believe in a holistic gospel expression, so we're looking for, you know, that Luke 4 expression where it's good news for the poor and it's freedom for the prisoners and it's sight for the blind and all of that. So we're, and it's just a lot of fun to, you know, send out these teams and to see that this journey of mission is, it transforms you. And so being a part of those kinds of efforts has had a deep impact on my life. And I keep, you know, growing and learning and being impacted by those teams that I interact with on the front
lines. How many missionaries do you have on the ground?
You know, it's there's a couple of different stats on this. We got 100 or so from North America that are long term.
Okay.
We have about 1,000 that are short term, up to a year, and then we've got like I'm going to say around 400 that are national workers that we support all over the world. So in crazy places that I can't say on camera.
Yeah, some of them.
No, a lot of them I can't. So I would say probably, you know, a tip of the iceberg is what you're going to see publicly in our work. A lot of it's we can't talk about.
So last night, my wife Nicole asks, okay, how often are you gone? How many days a month? You said about a third you're gone.
Yeah, about that.
So recent trips, and can you share any of that?
Yeah. I was a little while ago, I was in a village in northern India where it's a village of snake charmers. So these guys worship snakes, I think. They make their living, you know, begging for money, doing their snake thing next to the roads. Their wives beg, kids beg, no one goes to school, incredibly poor.
Right.
And some partners of ours are planting a church there. We're helping support that. And so I was invited to go in. They dug a water well, so there was a clean water in the village. They normally had to walk a couple of kilometers to get water. So now they've got water in this village, a big tank, and they wanted me to see that. And they also wanted me to see the school. They just got opened a month earlier. And so that was a part of, you know, the work in the village. And they had a craft thing. Anyways, there was a bunch of projects. So I get invited by the village chief into this little welcome ceremony. So you got a bunch of people from the village.
It's unreal.
And then, you know, you got a little tent. There's three plastic chairs. He puts me down. And, you know, he gives his little speech. I do a little speech in response. And then two guys walk in with baskets. And they pop the lids. And there's two cobras, like 3 feet from me, like just popped up like this. I'm like, what happened?
Whoa. You look at your watch going, time is up. Hey, thanks, everybody.
I did not sign up for this. So I'm just like looking at my friends and like, what do we do now? So the village chief is talking to this snake, and it's like a friend of his or something. And
wow.
he goes gingerly, picks this thing up. And he's holding this snake, and this snake's like pretty excited. It's kind of bobbing around. And then he looks at me, and he wants me to take this thing. And so, what are you gonna do? I'm like, I think I got to take the snake. So I took this thing. I took this cobra right out of his hand.
Is that right?
I have photos on my phone somewhere. I can show you the pictures. I start laughing because you know, what else are you going to do? Like, when you're about to die, you start laughing. I do anyway. So I'm laughing my head off.
This is like a frequent thing?
Oh, yeah. I'm holding this cobra, and this guy's laughing. And everyone's laughing because they're like, you know, we got the white guy to hold the snake, you know?
This is like Mark 14 stuff.
I know, Mark 16.
Or Mark 16, excuse me. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, you're supposed to, whatever, drive out demons.
Yeah.
Pick up snakes. Never had to do the third, you know? So I thought, okay, maybe this is it. So anyways, I give the snake back to the guy. And something totally changed in the dynamics of our relationship. Like, I didn't know this guy until this morning. But he took my hand, and he walked me through the village. And, you know, I mean, he wouldn't let go of my hand. Huh. Like, he was saying to the whole village, this guy is in. Like, wow. I totally trust him.
Just by his touch, he's going, I'm with this guy.
He's holding on to my hand. He won't let go. I'm like, I'm looking around like, you know, but this guy was saying, you're my friend. I trust you. And I don't know what happened in that little thing, that snake thing. I wasn't afraid. It happened so fast. I didn't know. I didn't have time to be afraid.
You tell this story to your wife?
Yeah, I actually showed her the picture, and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, hey, I signed up for this so many years ago. I don't know what's coming next. But but we went and visit the school project, you know, Christian teachers. This wonderful lady is the principal of the school. It's been open for 1 month. So you got 130 kids that are learning to read. They're learning the Bible. This isn't a village that's never had the gospel. There's been no expression of church or the gospel in this village, like, ever.
Because people need to understand, India, the South, huge impact.
Yeah.
The North, we've got some work there, but I know you guys are really hitting it. It's dark.
It's dark. So, you know, we just, as we think about these least reached parts of the world, you know, the gospel is good news on many fronts. It's good news in relationships. It's good news in terms of opening your eyes to see another world. You get freed from all of your superstitions and your fears. You don't have to worship snakes anymore. Mm. You can actually worship the living God.
Right.
And so, you know, that was a fun little window on how the gospel's transforming a village. And it's the early part of the story. So they're just getting the church started. The planter just entered the village. His wife is the
Where's the planter from? Sorry, cut you off.
Yeah, he's from the north.
That's great.
He's from North India. So he's been through one of the discipleship training programs. And we're actually building a training center right in that area. So we're building a training center to build into disciples who then become church planters and guys who are doing this holistic gospel witness in their communities.
So yesterday we're talking about, and you're going to have to help me with this, sort of where the center of things is happening in terms of, you know, where there's just a great influx of the gospel and how that really is shifting. You know, worldwide. Can you maybe talk about that a little bit?
Exactly. So Todd Johnson, you know, he's probably one of the top researchers out there right now in missions and movements and whatnot. But he's out of the research center in New Haven, Connecticut. And so he did a study a number of years ago on where is the numeric center of Christianity. It was obviously in 33 AD, it's Jerusalem.
Right.
And then it migrates, you know, north up into Antioch, and then it heads northwest up to Constantinople. And by the year 1500, it's up in southern Europe.
When does it hit Abbotsford? Abbotsford at what station? Is it like, you know, 1960?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, sorry.
So it ends up in southern Europe.
Yeah.
And then from that point on, from 1500, it starts moving west and southwest. So as the gospel goes through the Americas, the center, I mean, this is where an equal number of Christians are east, west, north,
okay,
and south of this point.
This is bullseye.
Bullseye, center. And the year, it's going southwest. So it gets down to the corner of Spain, southern corner of Spain.
Huh.
And then 1920 is where there's a shift. And for the first time, the center starts moving southeast. And this is the growth of the African and Asian church. So for the last 100 years, the center of Christianity is moving like just dramatically south and east. Now it's somewhere in Nigeria heading for Mali. And,
that's interesting, eh?
But my question is, okay, so that's the numeric center.
Yeah.
But where's the dynamic center? Where is the healthiest gospel DNA? Where is the DNA that when we look at the New Testament church, we go, okay, that is as close to the New Testament church as we can find.
What do you think?
I think it's more in the global south than it is in the west.
South America? Or just south of the equator?
I would say it's south of the equator, but where, I can't give you an exact location, but wherever first generation Christians are surrendering everything. And what I've noticed is that, you know, there's a letter that Paul wrote to the Thessalonians.
Yeah.
Let's call it Thessalonians. And 1 Thessalonians, he, you know, he says, this gospel didn't come to you merely with words.
Right.
But with power,
right,
with the Holy Spirit,
yeah,
and with deep conviction,
yeah,
and then he says, you know, we lived among you, you know, you became imitators of us and of the Lord, and then you saw how we suffered. In spite of that suffering, you guys embraced the gospel. So wherever the gospel is a spirit-filled gospel, an incarnational gospel,
yeah, it's vital,
and a costly gospel,
right?
It has a transformational impact. And I think it's not just a question, and we've talked about this before, it's not just words. You need words to actually put expression to this, but you need this added dimension of the transforming work of the Spirit of God in our lives that actually makes a difference in your relationships. You're willing to lay your life down for somebody. You're willing to be the good news, not just proclaim the good news. So like Paul, when he shows up in their town, he comes from that Philippian jail cell. He just,
right,
he just got flogged.
Right.
And he's worshiping with Silas. And then he shows up in, you know, Thessaloniki.
Yeah.
And he's probably got blood on his clothes.
Yeah.
I mean, he walks in, he's preaching.
It's like, look at my back, I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, this is normal, guys. So wherever the gospel is expressed in these kinds of ways, I think it's transforming not just lives, but it's transforming families, clans, villages, and we've lost some of that. So we've had a gospel that's kind of been handed to us. Some of us are fifth generation or eighth generation,
sure,
Christians.
Yeah.
We've had this gospel handed to us, and it's been primarily a words kind of thing. And we need the words, but we also need these other dimensions. And so I just wonder whether the North American church today, the Western church, has a lot to rediscover,
yeah,
about the gospel.
What's going on in China? Because China was always a going concern. South Korea.
Yeah.
Have you been there,
yeah,
lately?
Yeah.
What's happening there? How's,
yeah. So the Chinese church is massive. It's just absolutely, the house church movement is massive.
Is it above ground now?
It's still both above and below,
yeah,
and it's massive. They're working in some new ways, I would say, to in humility, work collaboratively, and you know, there was the whole Back to Jerusalem push that was going on for quite a few years, but there's been some challenges with that, just because of the struggle that a lot of those guys were sent out without supply lines, without support, without clear strategy.
I'm not the back to Jerusalem push. So I'm not familiar with that.
Massive movement out of China, in particular the house churches, to take the gospel. If the gospel started in Jerusalem and then went west, mm-hmm. and it's gone to then Asia and in Central Asia, the call was to bring it all the way back to Jerusalem to complete the, you know. So they were talking about this last frontier in mission is the Central Asian, a lot of Muslims, you know, the Middle East, the Gulf. Yeah. So bringing the gospel back through that stretch, what we often, you know, has been referred to as the 1040 window. But there's lots of, you know, there's lots of other elements in, you know, in that geography. But it's that whole push out of China was the
that's interesting.
Yeah, was on the front burner of the Chinese church, and they were sending workers out of these house church movements into like Central Asia and the Middle East, and so some of them have been there, but the reality is a lot of them have not been able to actually plant churches. So they've struggled, and they struggle for a variety of reasons. And so there's a new, I would say God is doing a new thing in bringing the church together globally to work at the last frontiers of mission. And no one church is going to be able to do it by themselves.
I've heard 300 million Christians in China.
Yeah, that could be.
It's hard to put easily the biggest
by far.
Which you consider 300 million.
Yeah.
Go back to the turn of the 20th century.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing short of.
Yeah, no, it's astounding. It's astounding. I think one of the biggest expressions of the church now in China has been the migrations from the countryside to the cities.
Okay.
The migrant worker phenomena. It's the largest. It's been said it's the largest migration in the history of the world, is the rural to urban migration in China. And these guys are living in these, you know, poor shanty towns on the edge of the cities. They're the ones that are putting up the skyscrapers and working in the factories and doing all that stuff. But they've been living, you know, really challenging, desperate lives often in the periphery of these cities without the infrastructure of education and, you know, healthcare and all of the other things that the growing middle class is enjoying in China. But they've also been very receptive to the gospel. So there is just a massive movement of house churches in all of those migrant worker communities.
Is it influx just because there's great opportunity to make some cash and all the stuff that's going on in China? You brought up Middle East, brought up Muslims.
Yeah.
Hot topic.
Hot topic.
Politically speaking, not even, you know, from a ministerial, missional standpoint, you know, I get the politics, I get the discussion, but most importantly, is the gospel making inroads with the Muslim population? Can you encourage people with that? Because it's just all heat, conjecture, conjecture, you know, tension, angst, but.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I'm really excited about what God's doing in what we call the Muslim world. There are more sovereign gospel presentations that Jesus is doing in Muslims.
You're talking about visions and dreams.
Visions and dreams that are just sovereign acts of grace. Huh. And I wonder sometimes if it isn't because we just aren't getting the job done. We are not willing to go. And, you know, when you think about Christ's call to go and make disciples, he doesn't say just in places that are safe.
He says Samaria.
He says Samaria. He says, you know, I'm sending you out like lambs among wolves. He says, you know, this is going to cost you. If you're going to follow me, you got to deny yourself, take up your cross, and you got to follow me. And, he laid his life down on this mission. So I've often asked churches, is martyrdom still an acceptable outcome in mission, or would we say that's inadequate risk management? Would we say, like, you guys haven't done your homework? right? Okay, so because we're not going to these places.
People don't go on missions because they're fearful of getting deli belly.
I know. So I'm saying, hey, if you can get over this issue of security and health, because I think health is big. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't have your health, you don't have anything, right? Mm-hmm. Huh? So health and security, you touch those two things, mm-hmm. and, you know, you've touched the main belief systems of North America.
So what is Jesus doing with the Muslims? What's going on?
So he's revealing himself to them, and then you come alongside, or anyone who's carrying the gospel comes alongside, and we bear witness to the reality of what they've seen. That man in white, that figure they've seen in their dreams, I know him. And as we give witness to who Jesus is, what he's revealed himself as in the Word, it confirms those dreams, and then folks are invited in. So let me give you an example. So last summer, we took 25 phenomenal young leaders into the border zone of Syria. And we brought them together with 35
this
young...
This is like ground zero of...
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
Militant Islam, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, you're 30 kilometers from Aleppo.
Yeah.
And so we had 35 Syrians and 15 Turks. And most of these folks are Muslim.
Yeah.
So the ones from North America, we just said, we just want people that are filled with Jesus, like just overflowing with Jesus. This can't be your first cross-cultural deal, but you got to be like totally sold out. And by the way, there was just a coup attempt in that country where we went to 3 weeks before. So I've never written in a waiver form like this before. This would be, and we didn't, I mean, we totally rewrote the waiver
form. You just held a snake. What do you care?
I'm not the right guy to be writing the waiver form. You're right. So we there was a coup attempt, people are getting killed and you could get kidnapped and we're not going to ransom you. Like, sign here, And so 25 phenomenal leaders signed and had so much prayer behind them. But we put these folks together, 75 people, in a hotel, and they spent more than a week together. And we just talked about what it means to be leaders who work towards peace. What are the barriers to peace? What are the ways in which we see each other and struggle to frame our own story in a way that actually builds understanding for other people to know who we are? How do you frame your story? How do you tell your story? How do you get over your preconceived ideas of who each other are? How do you actually work towards love? How do you love one another? And we never overtly were preaching, but we were actually calling people to follow the model of Jesus. Mm. And the result was these Muslims are asking us all kinds of questions because we did hold up Jesus as the example of a leader who was working towards peace. In the way he lived and the way he taught. And so these Muslims were saying, we want more about this.
Yeah, not by the sword, right? Not by the sword.
And so they're out. And so a couple of them were like, we've actually had dreams of Jesus. Like, we've seen him.
That's Acts 2, man. In these last days, old man will dream dreams, young man will see visions. Like, that's a pouring out of the Spirit.
It's happening. Yeah. And so, you can just quietly come alongside those folks and say, well, what the guy who met you in your dream, he's the one who's transformed my life. And I want to introduce him to you. And so a couple of those folks gave their lives to Jesus. So, I mean, that is just so cool. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that...
And you were telling me, you just told me about a half hour ago, the name of the leader, remind me.
Building Leaders for Peace.
Building Leaders. Yeah. Tell us about that. The people who are listening.
BL for P. Yeah. BL for P. And it's a phenomenal opportunity to actually be a part of a community that's bringing this good news that Jesus is our peace. He is our peace. He's the thing we're sharing. The reality of his presence in our lives is what we're talking about and demonstrating. So we're having a BL for P program, next summer.
Is that something that MB Missions?
ME Missions is a part of it, but we got coalition partners from all over.
I see. Okay.
So we're opening it up. This is not our deal. We're going to open it up to everybody. So we've got another, one of these programs going on with the FARC guerrillas in Colombia. So we're right in the FARC zone of Colombia.
You've been there?
Yeah, yeah, I have. Yeah, we're bringing together these demobilized guerrillas together with folks from the cities in Colombia, together with some guests from North America, into, again, a community, a space where we can love and learn from each other, and we can learn about Jesus as the Prince of Peace. Hmm. And so I think the gospel needs to, in all the conflict zones of the world, we need to demonstrate that it is good news. Like, it's the reality of Jesus is the only way we're going to solve these conflicts, these intractable conflicts that are causing nations to, you know, destroy each other, destroy themselves, are only solvable in Jesus. But people need to see him. And I wonder if, because we've been so concerned with people believing, they don't know if they belong. So I think the big witness that the church can bring is, you know what, you can belong.
Before you believe.
Before you believe. Yeah. You can belong.
Yeah.
This is a safe place.
That's the Celtic form of evangelism. I don't know if you've read.
I know that, yeah.
Hunter's book, yeah. Yeah. That's very true.
Yeah. So I think it's just, I think it's an old message, and it's an old.
But it's
old,
right.
It's right.
Well, that's the call of Jesus to his disciples. Come and see.
Yeah.
Right? Come and see.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't have their crap together.
No, they didn't.
Right?
No, totally.
Yeah. Now, you, in connection with that, you were telling me a sweet story. You weren't there, but heard about a story of a coming together of a group of Syrians. I know you were just touched upon that, but under this BL for Peace. Does that ring a bell from yesterday? You were sharing something that was just guys getting in the room together.
Yeah. In the course of that week, you know, there was all kinds of stories and issues in people's lives brought to the surface. So we had a bunch of these young Syrian refugee young people who've been living in Turkey for a few years. So some, you know, there's 3 million Syrians in Turkey. And so they've had their studies interrupted. They've been living in refugee camps, or they've been living just in cities trying to figure out how to make ends, you know, make ends meet. So they were, those are the communities we pull people from for this program. And as they're getting into the deeper issues in their lives, issues of conflict, you know, one of the guys just stood up and said, I've just become aware today that I'm just so full of anger towards you Turks. Because I came here from Syria, and I haven't been welcome. Like, I'm the foreigner, and we've been struggling to find work, and we feel rejection, and so I've been angry at you guys. And I'm just realizing today that I'm being held back by that anger. So I'm forgiving you guys. I'm forgiving you Turks. And they're like, whoa, because this is not part of Islamic language. This is not. So these Turkish folks are listening, and spontaneously two guys stand up, and they walk to the front, and they give this guy a big hug. So, like, you know, these big, tough guys, everyone's crying. And, you know, there's just something beautiful about people owning their own story and the conflict in their story, and then finding the language that we take for granted in the church to forgive and to receive forgiveness.
And the power of that?
The power of that to set you free, right? So the church has got some keys that we can give society in conflict zones. And I think it's just, the thing that's holding us back, though, this is ironic, because in an hour where there's so much opportunity to actually demonstrate good news through peace and reconciliation, the church is, I would say, cowering in fear.
When you say the church, the North American church.
The North American church, we're kind of, you know, there's so many of us that are afraid. And we're thinking more, because of the terrorism incidents, we're thinking more of our safety and security. Mm. So is the gospel, is it actually the primary narrative in our lives? Or have we lost the storyline? Like, is the storyline?
So speak into that a little bit. If you were just looking across, so I'm Joe average Christian living in North America.
Yeah.
You know, hey, all these people coming here, you know, and blow up that. And, yeah. You know, hey, I'm going to keep my family safe. And, hey, I'm all for people coming to Jesus, but I'm not for. So what would you say to that person? What's a proper response? What's a biblical, gospel-centric response to the influx of others?
Right. So Jesus is so clear on this. He says, you know, if you're going to be called sons of your Father in heaven, you're going to love your enemies. Mm. And so I think this is heaven's paternity test. Like, you want to know who your dad is? Tell me how you treat your enemies. So they might not be your personal enemies, but your culture's enemies provide an opportunity for you to demonstrate the gospel's power to transform you and actually open up new opportunities for relationships with people. If that's real in your life, I think it has to change how we see other cultures. And so when people come from, in particular, war-torn areas of the world, many times they're coming to North America looking for refuge and a better life. And because we've got these privatized definitions of faith, we're often really hesitant to engage in a relationship or a conversation about Jesus, because it's our own problem. It's not their problem. Muslims are very willing to talk about faith. Hmm. And not just from a combative standpoint. It's just been such a part of their lives. It's the integration in Islamic societies of your faith, of economics, of politics, of family. It's all integrated. And so they don't have the same privatization of faith that we do in the Christian, quote-unquote, Christian West. And so if we can get over our fear in this area and engage in relationships where we actually welcome people into our homes and we say, hey, you know, here's what we're about, and we earn the right to actually have deeper conversations with them, you'll find your Muslim neighbors very interested in talking about Jesus.
So are you, if I hear you right, you're saying Jesus tells me to go to Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the earth.
Yeah.
I can't be opposed to the ends of the earth
coming here.
Samaria, Judea, and Jerusalem coming here.
Exactly.
I'm okay going out, but you can't come?
Yeah.
It's
inconsistent.
It's asinine.
It's inconsistent.
It's totally inconsistent. Whether I go out or they come here, my response is, I'm a witness for Jesus.
Totally. Totally. And like Paul was saying to the Thessalonians, it's not just words. It is words, but it's not just words.
Absolutely.
It has got to be demonstrated in really clear ways that put good news, like put flesh on good news.
Do you see that happening anywhere in the Vancouver area, for example, or Canadian, let's go Canadian-wide?
For sure. So we've got a refugee welcome center in Surrey. And
I forget his name now.
Our good friend Samir Youssef.
Yes,
So Oasis Ministries, we have a welcome center in Surrey.
Yeah.
We've got a couple hundred, Syrians that are in this community in Surrey.
Yeah.
Some people call it Little Baghdad.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of folks in a 1-2 square kilometer area and, who are from the Middle East. And so there are literally hundreds of them are in that welcome center. And
that's great.
And so it's a great place to be, you know, to be a friend and to actually spend some time getting to know a Syrian, family. And they're getting ESL training. English is a second language there. They're looking for jobs. They're looking for friends.
Yeah.
And they're literally asking us, like, do you know any families, like Canadian families, who can actually, and we know you guys are Christian. Like, are there Christian families who we can get to know? And I'm like, yeah, there are. some of them, you know, might not know that you're interested in actually pairing up, twinning with them, and opening up your lives to each other. But, I invited a couple of these guys to a panel. I just did a panel discussion with a few refugees. I brought together a couple of Syrian guys with a boat person from 40 years ago, the Vietnamese boat people, because that was the last big wave that came into Canada.
I remember that.
Yeah. And so
I'm not that young. I remember those days.
Yeah. So this Vietnamese lady, she's like, okay, we got welcomed into this country. And in fact, the the Canadian immigration official that welcomed her, she got off the plane from a tropical place, and she landed in the middle of winter in Calgary, and she was freezing. She got off the plane, she was freezing. You know what this immigration guy did? He gave her his coat. He didn't just like loan it to her. He took it off and he put it around her.
Sounds
and he said,
like James stuff.
He
right
said,
there,
"That's
man.
Your coat, and you're gonna need this because it's cold here. It's like February in Calgary." And so she, she just said, "There was then a church that welcomed my family. They helped us with food and with stuff that we needed, and you know we just had a lot of needs and." More importantly, they were friends to us. So a woman opened her home. Me and a couple of other new immigrants, we went to her home every week. And she said it was the highlight of my week. Wow. It was the highlight. And I, over the course of a year, got to know that this woman was loving me because of Jesus. And I said, I want that. So I became a Christ follower. And for the last 20 years or 25 years, I've been helping refugees discover the love of Christ in really practical ways. And so she's telling us her story, and I'm like, wow.
Okay, this is.
And the two Syrian guys beside her are just like taking it all in. But I think every time there's a wave of newcomers to Canada or to wherever you're living, it's a great opportunity to live the gospel.
Last question.
Yeah.
Maybe just take a couple minutes. Again, this is stuff that we've talked about, stuff that, you know, I've seen on my own, but, you know, you're a missions guy, but it's not, okay, we do church and we do missions, but the church is the mission and the church is the people that come out of maybe local ministries.
Yeah.
Maybe talk about the fact that, right here in North America, there is a great need of people that aren't being reached, and we just assume that they are.
Totally agree. I think North America is a massive mission field. North America, we need to see our societal context here through different eyes. And if we can understand that we live in a mission field, that mission isn't somewhere you go far away. Missions is a way of life. And missions is something that every disciple of Christ needs to be core to our DNA. So we've been putting out this vision, one mission, local, national, global.
Mm.
So it's not two missions. It's not local church planting, local witness, and then missions is somewhere far away. No, it's one mission, local, national, global. We can learn things today as never before from the church globally. We can bring back those learnings here. We can also share what God's been doing and given us here in terms of our resources and the depth of our faith and our security in Christ and some of the confidences that he's given us with the new first generation emerging church in other parts of the world. We've got things to learn and also things to contribute. And if we will see ourselves, you know, in a missional context, and all of us have assignments in this missional context, I think it's going to change the identity of the church. Because right now, church, for some people, it becomes a consumer item. It becomes something you use, you take, rather than a place, and actually more importantly, a people, that are on a mission together. So if the church can understand herself as the people of God on mission together, there is assignments for everybody. So I think we give lip service to the Matthew 28, you know, go and make disciples. But I think operationally we think, oh, that's actually for the 1%. That's for like a few guys who go to crazy places.
Right.
You know, like you're supposed to do that, but I get a pass. I just pray.
I'm too busy.
And I give. That's what I do.
Yeah.
And I go to church.
Yeah.
And I think it's just, we have to shift that Matthew 28 Great Commission is for all of us.
Yeah.
And we live, you know, in a mission field right here, and we gotta be good news, share it. So,
and there is so much, like we talked about previously, there's so much angst and helplessness and just trying to put your trust on an ideology or a person or a mandate, or if I have this and everything will be okay, but it's just not.
No.
Hey man, thank you.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to get in touch with you just about MB missions, or hey, I'd like to do something. Is there how's the best way of getting in touch with you?
Yeah, just email me at mbmission.org. So just randyf@mbmission.org. Great. I'd love to interact with anyone interested in learning, making a difference, being part of BL for P, or any other of our programs.
That's awesome. Thank you, brother.
Right on, Norm.
Yeah, I love you much. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All the best.
Thanks again for joining us for this episode of the Roundtable Podcast. For more information about the ministry of Westside Church, go to wchurch.ca.